There are more than 100 land-grant universities in the United States today, and as the name implies, those institutions got started with land given by the federal government in the 19th and 20th centuries. Almost all land-grant universities are public, and they broadened access to higher education across the country. But few have asked who paid for their good fortune, according to a years-long investigation by High Country News. The answer, unequivocally, is indigenous people. A team of reporters and researchers tracked down nearly 11 million acres taken from Native American communities to fund these universities. The investigation, published a year ago, was called Land Grab Universities, and it has since won major awards and sparked calls for change. Let's get an update with Tristan Ottone. He's lead reporter on the project for High Country News. He's now editor-in-chief of the Texas Observer. Tristan, thanks for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And it's been a year since the investigation came out. Universities have been forced to acknowledge this history that you've laid out. Some have even incorporated the reporting into their curriculum. Students have been out protesting. I mean, were you surprised by the reaction that this got?
Frankly, yes. I was definitely surprised at how fast action began to take shape after the story came out. The story dropped basically when COVID had hit the United States and everything started going into lockdown, so there was almost no other story. We were kind of worried nobody would actually read it, but clearly that wasn't the case.
Clearly they did. So let's back up, though, for those who did miss it and remind people of the investigation. How did it come to be that 11 million acres of land was, in many cases, just outright taken from Native people to fund these universities?
Well, that's basically through something that's called the Morrill Act of 1862. So essentially what the Morrill Act did was make a national program to use land in the West to be turned into seed money as real estate for universities. So essentially, you're getting land that's given to you by the federal government after being taken by indigenous people. It's entering the U.S. real estate market and then being sold. So those 11 million acres came from approximately 250 different tribal nations through about 160 treaties and land seizures. And those originally went to 52 universities, essentially siphoned through the Morrill Act.
I see. So you tracked down 99% of all Morrill Act acres, tried to figure out who the land belonged to in the beginning before it was sold. And what are some of the things that you found out that stood out to you?
I mean, I think the big thing that we really got to see in terms of looking at all of this were really the big takeaway numbers at the end, that we're talking about, you know, $495 million worth of real estate from about 10.7 million acres for the benefit of 52 universities that affected at least 245 tribal nations. But I think generally sort of being able to see that these are traceable, trackable pieces of land with receipts, with quantifiable amounts attached to them, was really an eye-opener, I think, in the reporting process. This is a style of investigation that can be done very easily with a number of different applications.
One of the numbers that you found, Cornell raised $92 million off of 978,000 acres. It's remarkable.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, Cornell was definitely sort of the big school in terms of raising cash. And then, you know, some of the Western schools didn't do, or most schools didn't do anywhere as well as Cornell did. But I think it speaks to sort of the massive amount of money that's involved in terms of what is essentially a wealth transfer from indigenous nations to U.S. colleges.
So I think one thing that's noteworthy here is that for many people who are not familiar with this history, land-grant universities are very much a source of significant state pride. And in fact, they have done a lot of good for the people who've gone there in the past century or more and for the states where they're located. But as you point out here very clearly, that building them meant taking land from hundreds of indigenous tribal nations. How would you describe what that has meant for them?
Well, you say, or you mentioned that these have done a lot of incalculable good for communities in the United States, but obviously the point of the investigation was to look at what the impacts of those were. And the bottom line here is that you've got hundreds of tribal nations that are no longer located in their traditional territories or homelands because they were removed to make way for programs like the Land-Grant University Program. The impact is incalculable to those tribal nations who don't have access to that land anymore, or to those resources for that matter, that were transferred from their control.
As I said, it's been about a year since the investigation came out. The response, you describe it as surprising. The University of Florida, Cornell, Yale, MIT, all across the country, students are starting to speak out about this. What kind of activism have you seen emerge around the issue?
Well, we've seen quite a bit, actually, everything from investigative journalism that's happening around it all the way to protests, to changes, demands for changes in curriculum, even to the demands for name changes of Morrill Hall at Cornell University. We've seen action at almost two dozen schools in some form or another, be it holding conferences to look at the gains that universities receive from tribal nations, all the way to changes in land acknowledgments.
What about the concept of reconciliation? I'm sure there's many Native students out there across the country who hear something like this or know this history and think or say, why am I paying tuition at one of these schools?
Well, that's one of the big things that we've seen activists take up with our reporting here, is to demand for universities to offer free tuition for Indigenous students, as well as even debt forgiveness for Native students that have gone through their programs. It is one small step. We have seen other more radical steps, I guess, in terms of thinking about what land returns could possibly look like, or purchasing land in lieu of land that was taken from tribal nations. But it really runs the gamut from, starting at sort of your lowest bar of free tuition for students impacted by the Morrill Act, all the way up to what programs could look like to restore land lost.
What else are you hearing from universities, and what kind of responsibility they're taking to get this message out or to acknowledge the history? Because, by the way, many of them are still actually profiting off of the resources on this land.
Yeah, that's correct. A number of schools still in the West maintain either surface rights or mineral rights to Morrill Act acres. What we found in our reporting was that about 16 land-grant universities still retain those acres, and in fiscal year 2019, at least alone, they brought in about $8.7 million in revenue. One of those schools, South Dakota State University, is one of the institutions that's actually started redirecting finances from those mineral and surface acres to Native students in recognition of the impact of the Morrill Act. And that was happening before our reporting came out, by the way, not after. But it does show like a really, really interesting example of how you can use that incoming revenue to support Indigenous students.
Tristan Ottone helped report the Land Grab University series for High Country News, now editor-in-chief with the Texas Observer. Thanks very much for updating us on this story. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.